Hi, everybody. This is Mark, Prepper Guy, back at you for episode 31. So I want to talk a little bit about my plans and what I'd like to do, because I've said before, as a prepper for 40 years, I think I need to start focusing on maybe stopping things from happening that are the things I'm prepping for, end of the world and shit like that. So stay tuned.
Hump day, yeah!
Hi, my name is Mark. I'm the Prepper Guy, and this is a Prepper Guy podcast. In a world that's always changing and full of fear and confusion, and especially when it comes to prepping, I am a minimalist, and I like to be ready for anything that life may throw at us, whether it's bad, the end of the world, or just a flat tire on a deserted road.
Well, all right, like I said, I want to talk about all of this stuff, and I think we've pretty much talked about the Oregon situation enough. Not that I don't think it needs more talking about, but it's time to move on. And the reason why I wanted to make this episode was because during this whole Oregon debacle, it really kind of upset me. And as an American, I look at that and go, well, what can we really do about any of this stuff that's going on? And there really isn't much that we can do about it. I mean, the government has gotten way too large. It doesn't listen to us regarding anything. And so it was just kind of disheartening to see that there's nothing we can do about it. A good person was shot and murdered, and there'll be no investigation and no solving of that at all, which in the scheme of things, I guess, is pretty much same old, same old. And I've talked a lot about the fact that what they were doing in Oregon was protesting property rights, and whether they wore cowboy hats or baseball hats, it really doesn't matter. It's about property rights, and we've talked a little bit about what is your property rights, and that has anything to do with your property. It's a simple word to look up. Your ideas, your notes, your memoirs, your journals, your conversations, these are all part of your property. It's just not the dirt that we reside on, or our house, or our car. It's everything in that car, everything you've bought and worked for. So when you watch a YouTube video from somebody and they put that on out there and they share it, they're sharing their property. And so when you really think about it, a lot of things in our lives are our property. So how do we protect it when you have a bully in the neighborhood that can just come along and at will, because he's bigger than you, take your lunch money, basically, because that was your property back in school, too. That's what the government has become, is the big bully. And if they choose that they want your property, then you pretty much might as well just give it up, because you see what they can do. So I got a little irritated with it, and one of my listeners said, you know, I should maybe stop dropping the F-bomb so much, which is true, because that's a word that should only be used to really punctuate your feelings. I explained to him that I was really miffed and quite disheartened about what had happened in Oregon and with Livaway Finicum. And so, yeah, I kind of let it rip. So that's how upset I was about this, because I try not to just swear at random just because it's a fun thing to do. So when we analyze the world in which we live in and you look at what is yours, how badly do you want to keep that? You may have a YouTube channel or a podcast or a website, and it's full of your ideas and your posts and your words, and that's your property. You have every right to protect it. Well, how do you protect it when a federal government comes along and it installs a kill switch in the internet, and just because they deem what's going on as dangerous, they just shut it off? And when they shut that off, no one will have access to anything. Or they could come along and just put a lot of pressure on maybe YouTube or your service provider and shut you personally down, just you as an individual. And we've seen that on Facebook. We've seen it on YouTube, where somebody that maybe has a site that where he sells guns, and they've shut him down. Or he just talks about guns and makes YouTube videos on this gun safety. They've shut him down. So they've pretty much taken his property. Now, you could sit there and go, well, he's probably got backup and all that. And true, he does. But his ability to take his property to market, keeping the commerce regular, so to speak, has been stopped. Doesn't matter if the bully takes your lunch money or he just stops you from going into the cafeteria and spending it. So there's a slight difference, but what gives them the right to do that? I mean, yeah, if you're really a terrorist and you're really doing something bad and you're screaming bomb in an airplane or fire in a crowded theater, then that could be a danger and you probably shouldn't do it, and they would probably be able to stop you from doing that. But if you're just expressing your ideas in a forum or on a video or a podcast, should they just shut you down because they think you're dangerous? There's been no real breach of safety. They just assume they don't like what you're talking about, and it might start other people thinking. And God forbid we get people thinking. That's why hate speech has become a real heated issue in Europe and England. You can be arrested for just saying something that offended someone else. Well, a lot of times when we're talking, it might offend somebody. We might not even have known it, and yet they were offended. Now, if they're not cowards, they might come to you and say, hey, what you said really kind of offended me because my sister had this happen, or my mother died of that, or whatever, and you discuss it. And then you can apologize, or he might say, oh, I see the context you were using it. That's okay. That's what happens in civil law or in a civil society. People talk civilly to one another and work out their differences. Well, if the federal government decides that we are not capable of being civil, and they base that on what they see, people reacting and having hurt feelings about everything nowadays and being offended by everything nowadays, and making such a big deal out of it that they do feel they have a little bit of a right. But is that lawful? Do they really have a right to do that? So maybe I'm talking more to the people that are out there protesting and flipping out because they got their panties in a wad, and they shouldn't be doing that. They should be actually working with the people. So my big push on this is I don't think a lot of younger people realize what socialism is and what control socialism forces onto your life, and how it literally strips you of your freedom and your liberty. Because any socialist country, and even big kind of capitalist socialist countries like China, censor their internet. They've shut it down in North Korea and places like that. Why? Because they have sensitive ears and it hurts them? No. Because their government doesn't want them reading and seeing this stuff, because they might start thinking for themselves and going, hey, wait a minute, we don't need to be following this Kim Jong, around and doing all this stuff. We could actually do quite well as a nation if we would quit listening to this lunatic. Well, he doesn't want that, and no control freak does, so therefore it's censored. Well, when we start looking around in America and thinking these are good ideas, and we go, well, I've got nothing to hide, go ahead and spy on me 24/7 and monitor my internet use, that might be good for now. But what happens when you get angry about something and you actually say something, and you're not going to go out and act on it, but you make a comment about how mad you are, and they shut you down. They come and arrest you. Everything you've said and done for the last 5 years has been recorded, and they can use that against you. Now, your lawyer won't be able to get that information and use it to help you. Maybe all the good things you said and did over those same 5 years, because that's classified. So they're going to use it against you. And that will bring down the big giant lid on America eventually, and we will be stuck inside. So I want people to think about what is really yours, because you own that information. We as a people own the internet. We created these phone companies through using their services and paying the bills. The internet was partially built by the government for government purposes, but it's morphed into something now that, you know, 20 years ago, somebody laid some logs on the ground, and then the rest of the American people built a really nice house on top of that. Well, we own that. And because the government pitched in, we own the government. I mean, all the money the government spends is our money. So it's a little different, like when Obama says, well, you didn't build that. Well, no matter whose money it was, if it was the government or the city or the Department of Transportation's money, where did they get it? Did they have a bake sale that I didn't see? No, they got it from you and me. So it's still our money. That's how the government was kind of set up, to where they had a bigger pot. And then that way it could be pulled together and used to do bigger projects. But make no mistake, that money came from our tax dollars. And now they want to shut it off and censor the internet. Well, maybe for me, because I'm old school, I still know how to write a letter. I know how to do things to where I could still get the word out so many ways without the internet. It would just upset me, because I enjoy doing this, and I enjoy really uploading it and doing all that stuff, recording it. Well, if my technology is gone, it'd be like breaking my skateboard. I mean, it's not the end of the world. I can still walk. But younger people live on that. And a lot of people I've met and know actually make really a good living making videos and having blogs and stuff like that, and e-commerce sites. To where you shut that internet down, you've basically stopped them from going into the cafeteria and eating their lunch. And so that's one thing that we really need to not buy into the BS that, oh, it's for your good. It'll be so wonderful. And people won't post pictures of nude girls. It's like, what does that have to do with freedom and liberty? I mean, if a girl wants to get nude and post her picture all over the internet, it really isn't my business, your business, or the federal government's business. But they use these cute little packaging ways of doing it, to where even somebody that makes a living, maybe millions a year off of the internet, doesn't realize that he might be the next target. Not just him specifically, but all of his groups, even other people that do that, even like you. So they might just say, well, no more e-commerce because we're not collecting enough taxes, and they're circumventing it. We need to shut that down. And all of a sudden they just do. Then what do you do? Well, what are you going to fight it? You'll be bankrupt before that day ever comes to you walk into a court and plead your case. So this is something that needs to be slowed down, stopped, and reversed. They've been trying to do that with the FCC for years, saying, well, there's not enough freedom of expression on the airwaves. It's like, well, first of all, who cares? If you want to say something and you have a radio transmitter, you say it. It's the same as posting stuff on Facebook. People choose to tune in or not. They don't own the airwaves. They just think they run it. So if you're not playing by their set of rules, they just take your license, and now you try to broadcast, they will triangulate and come in, SWAT team you, and throw you in jail. They will literally triangulate on your signal, bring in a whole bunch of people heavily armed, seize your radio, all your equipment, and put you in jail. And you might get out, but you'll never get your equipment back, and you'll never be able to touch a radio again, because that'll be part of your probation, and you've been put out of business. So they've been doing these sneaky things a long time, and they're going to continue to do it because that's what people do. I mean, it's like the story of the snake. Why did he bite the woman? Because he's a snake. That's what they do. So the federal government's not going to back off and give us more control, because that would mean they're losing control, and control freaks never back off. They want more, not less. So it might be two steps forward, and then if you smack them around a little bit through an election, they take one step back, and then they lay low, and then they take two steps forward, and then they might take one step back and two steps forward. They're always going ahead one step, sometimes even two if they don't get caught. So younger people need to look at this stuff and go, you know, this stuff might affect me. being involved in politics might be a good thing. Actually learning what my Constitution says and how great it would be if we actually lived that way instead of this new way, how much more freedom I would have to prosper. And once you get your head around that, you go, oh, wow, they're really trying to rob me blind in every corner of the room. Everywhere I turn, they're taxing me, regulating me, stifling, holding me back, and stopping me. So that's just one of the things when you look at politics of why you should be involved. And there's thousands of them because these people that are control freaks have been at it for 200 years, chipping away at it. And unfortunately, as they chip away on the piece of granite that is the Constitution, instead of turning into a beautiful sculpture like maybe Michelangelo did with his carvings and stuff, no, they're chipping it away to where there's nothing left of it. They're not trying to create something beautiful from it to smooth it and polish it. No, they're not trying to smooth it out and make it pretty. They're trying to destroy it. And there's no beautiful goal in at the end because they're control freaks. So I want you to think about that and maybe see if you can get involved in other areas besides just deciding to vote for Bernie Sanders because he sounds honest. Well, I can be honest looking at your car and tell you that it don't run, but my plan to fix it might be a really bad idea. So that doesn't give me carte blanche to get elected as president because I was smart enough and honest enough to go, yeah, man, your car don't run. Big deal. There's no solution in that statement. So we'll switch subjects here a little bit. I'm going to be a little bit of a self-promoter here and go to my sponsor, which is me and Doomsday Depot. Be right back.
Preppers should always be prepared, and the Prepper Guy can help you find the supplies you need without having to get lost in a big box store or on a website designed to sell you everything else. Our online store offers a focused shopping experience, making it easy to zoom in to find what you need. Because we affiliate with Amazon to deliver our goods around the world, you'll always find the best values, too. Find what you need at DoomsdayDepot.com. Remember, that's Doomsday with a Z, where you can zoom in to find what you need and learn more at PrepperGuy.com, too.
Well, okay, we want to talk a little bit also about the many things that we've discussed in the 30-plus episodes about why we prepare and why we're preppers. And I've kind of told you my reason and how I've been doing this for quite a long time, 40 years to be exact. And so I'm pretty well prepared for pretty much anything that can happen because I got the basic skills down. And being a prepper isn't a lifetime thing. You just want to be prepared for anything. So it's not like you got to prepare for a business presentation your whole life. You just prepare for that day. Once you got it figured out and you know how to use PowerPoint or whatever you use, then you're good. So you might throw together some ideas and put together some presentations that are generic that you could morph into something better. And then you're done. You're not going to spend the rest of your life panicking about this. So it's the same with prepping. But most people have different reasons for prepping, and there's hundreds, maybe even thousands of reasons. The major ones being, you know, a big giant coronal mass ejection or, you know, a solar flare that could shut America off and send us back to the 7th century as far as technology and everything goes. Major earthquake or volcanic activity like Yellowstone erupting, if it went all crazy, that would pretty well kill all the people in a couple states. It would definitely do a lot of damage. You know, any natural disasters or things that we prepare for. But then most of them are the unforeseen ones that they think about. And a lot of people prepare for a zombie apocalypse or a pandemic or economic collapse. I would put zombies in there with some of the natural disasters like a solar flare or something. Because if that happened, that's just weird. I'm not saying science hasn't maybe gotten to that point and you never know. But that changes all the rules to the game. But if you're planning for the normal things, an economic collapse or some kind of pandemic, something like that, nuclear war, these are things that we might be able to actually help change. if we become wiser and we get involved, we could definitely, you know, stop an economic collapse. We could stop pandemics and stuff by doing certain measures that would work and not take away our freedom, but would actually solve the problem. There are so many scenarios, I really can't list them all. But if we're involved, we might be able to change the outcome. We'll definitely be prepared for it, but could we do something to change it, like being involved politically, starting groups, taking posts and videos that are really well produced and put together by smart people, you know, good economists that aren't talking BS, but ones that are talking common sense things like getting out of debt and how to manage your money right and stay away from the stock market and maybe slight savings and how to save safely. And then you get involved and you share those things and you get them out there. You get them out there to your people that you know care, and you get them to get it out there. It might help. I'm not saying it will help, but it might, because just like this election we're going into, how do any of these candidates get momentum? They get the word out. They're covered by the news. It's on Facebook. It's on Twitter. And it builds momentum on its own because of the many hundreds of thousands of people that like what that person is saying. We can do that with any issue. So we need to get involved and see if we can change it up a bit. See if we can change the game. So what most of this leads me to the conclusion is, as humans, we want to better our existence. As Americans, we want to better our freedom and liberty. And all of those actions require some kind of involvement from us. And I just wonder, and this is what really has got me kind of thinking a lot, does it matter? Now, I'm not being a fatalist, but, and I kind of talked a little bit about this, but, you know, from a religious point of view, there's end times and there's the book of Revelations, and every religion has their beliefs on either a second coming or whatever they called it. Even the Mayan calendar was supposed to end. And so all of these things seem to run across all religious groups and beliefs, that something's going to happen at the end where there will be the big guy showing up and straightening stuff out. Well, if that's really true, then how are we going to change that? Because it's not a matter of destiny. It's probably just a matter of, it's like the egg timer's gone off and that's that. It's okay. It's Sunday morning. On the seventh day, everyone rests. Whatever the religious context is that it's being spoken, it's pretty much inevitable. How we're living our lives and maybe how we'll be judged is a variable that we can change throughout our life. But can we change things? Can we actually slow the roll enough? Or is it just a foregone conclusion based on any scripture that in the end of times, things have gotten so bad that there is no changing it? It's an inevitability. And all we can do is really be ready for it personally and spiritually, to where we're not in trouble. So when we're called into the principal's office, we can sit there with a clear conscience and go, I'm really glad I didn't get involved in that, because now I'm not in trouble. But can we change the course of the system in which we live, whether you're from Europe or the Middle East or in America or Canada? We're all run by a certain bureaucracy that pretty much limits our freedoms and the things that we can and cannot do to be involved. So, and does it really matter? You know, it matters to me on a personal level to live my life properly and to try to be out there doing good. But it, to the level of fixing a country of all of its political woes, I don't think that my two cents is going to change a whole lot. And I'm not really sure, so I'm just throwing this out there, seeing if any of it sticks. And I know there's a lot of people out there that I banter with back and forth on Facebook that are quite a bit smarter than me. Maybe they're more strategic than I am, or they look at things differently Because I look at things more philosophically. It's just like, I don't think we can change it, so I just live a good life. I'm prepared, and I'm trying, and that's all I can do. Maybe there is something to be said for getting more involved, and I don't know if that's religiously or just personally, because, you know, no matter which God you're talking to at the time, their idea and concept of time is way different than ours. So if your God says, well, I'll be down in 5 minutes, he's not talking about 5 times 60. He's talking about 5 minutes in his timekeeping method. That could be 5 years, could be 50 years. So can we make it better? Could our grandparents and great-grandparents have been a little more involved to where we wouldn't have this overreaching, overbearing government that wants to seize all the land because they didn't stay involved and connected enough to stop it from happening? It sounded good to them, just like the internet kill switch might sound good to some people out there. And then it happens, and then nothing bad happens for a while, and then over time it's just used to meet their ends. You know, it's not nothing personal, it's just business. It's government business. And so I don't know. I know for a fact that if, you know, 2 generations, 3 generations back, our great-grandparents would have been more involved in stopping some of this destruction of the Constitution and all these feel-good maneuvers, we would be in far better shape. I'm just not sure if we're winding down to the last few seconds of the game and it's going to matter. I mean, I know it doesn't matter enough to me to go out there and be like Lavoie and end up getting killed and leaving this beautiful family behind, because I haven't maybe seen the light in that situation to where it really does matter, because I have that barrier there that tells me I'm not sure. I'm not sure I can make enough change to where it will help the next generation, because maybe the buzzer's going to go off and it's over. You know, and that isn't to say anything about anyone's decisions that have gotten in trouble with this Bundy protest in Oregon and got one man killed, because they maybe had a different belief and they felt it was a just cause and they felt there was enough time and they didn't think that we were in the 5 second clock, but I kind of do. So that's why I say, if any of you out there have some more information for me than I'm maybe seeing, because I like being involved, but I just wonder, does it matter? I look at society as a whole and just think, why do I even care to get, you know, a black bag put over my head and disappeared or shot or taken away from my family and my kids and my grandkids for something that nobody seems to care about? That's why I say, you know, that this younger generation needs to get involved. And there's a lot of young people out there that are very smart and are really trying to fight for freedom and liberty. But are there enough of them? Is it going to make a change? And the only way we can change it in the society that we have right now is through some elections and such. And way over 40% are thinking Bernie Sanders is looking pretty good. And if that's who's going to get elected, then there is no hope. So if they won't change their minds and get involved, then that's one big part of the group that is not going to have my back. And then you look at the apathy in people and you just, you know, you're like, maybe you should go protest in Oregon because you're retired and you have an RV and you're waiting for something to go do. Go do that. And they're like, nah, I don't know. Maybe. I'm just not sure if I really even care, or I'm not really sure if I agree with what they're doing there. And so you got that, which is, you know, maybe a bigger portion than 10%. But as you start adding up all these percentages of people that either flat out don't care, or their agenda is diametrically opposed to what maybe you care about with liberty and freedom, and then you have the apathy, and then you have people that choose not to even be involved for no reason. They just won't even think about it. And what's the old expression? The person that will not read is worse off than the person that cannot read. Because if you can't read, that's different than if you just choose not to. So maybe it's a person that will not get involved is far worse off than a person that just can't get involved. So you have to look at your life and go, I really can't pull away from business or family or whatever I'm into right now. And so I can't be there physically. And then there's just people who go, I so don't care. That's them over there. I'm not a rancher. I don't wear cowboy boots. What do I care? You know, but if you're someone that maybe can't get involved, you know, physically being there, can you do other things that help? And those are only decisions you can make. You can send money to a good organization that's actually trying to do something, not like United Way, but I mean, you know, some of these groups that are actually on the ground and need some funding. Or you can, you know, retweet and send posts and stick your neck out there a little bit. So I don't know. I really can't figure it out. But that's, you know, kind of my wrap on this whole situation and how it kind of pertains to prepping and being involved politically and actually caring about your country and what's going on. So my last thought that I wanted to kind of go on a little bit about was the same thing I've talked about before is involvement with some of these bigger groups, I'll call them. You know, there's the Oath Keepers, which I think is an awesome organization because the principle is, or at least the principle they are working on, is getting law enforcement and peace officers and people that affect us every day, maybe through just a routine traffic stop to something more serious, trying to get them to honor their oath that they took. And with sheriffs, who are the chief law enforcement officers in any community, they basically, they're the funding for what the police do, basically. I don't know how to, when you follow a chain of authority, the chief of police is really a job that he receives from the mayor. And anytime he flashes that badge or anyone on a local police department flashes their badge or does anything, the funding, if we call it a checkbook, comes from the sheriff. So the authority is coming from the sheriff because the sheriff is the one that is elected. So basically the old premise that crap runs downhill. If the police make a mistake and someone's house is SWAT teamed by the police or the FBI or the ATF, it's in the sheriff's jurisdiction, and the sheriff's department will be the one that has their neck on the line for allowing that to happen. Now, granted, the sheriff could say, I wasn't aware of this action, and that might be partially true, but most sheriff's departments in many counties across America have been taken to court because this action was taken basically in their name. So the Oath Keepers try to inform sheriffs that you are the big dog on the porch, and if someone gets bit by one of the other dogs in the yard, it's still your fault. And they need to understand their oath, and that their oath says that they protect the citizens of their county and they protect their rights. They don't run around worrying about silly things like rolling through a stop sign, you know, in a non-dangerous method out in the middle of nowhere. That's delegated to the police to keep traffic laws and minor things like that taken care of, where the sheriff is usually handling murder cases and stuff. And so the sheriff has delegated his authority, but that doesn't mean he's not on the hook for any actions that might be over the top. And this might not be the way the legal system now wants us to look at it. But when you strip it down to its ultimate, you know, simplicity, that is really how it works in a constitutional republic. Because the people that we elect are the ones that protect our rights, whether they're congressmen or senators or even the president. If you look at their job description, it states pretty clearly that their description of their job is to protect the rights
of the citizens, not to run around and do all these other things they do. So I think Oath Keepers is a great organization. And then there's the 3%ers that are becoming quite a large group. And I haven't studied them completely, but I know that they are more like a militia should be, to where when something is happening, they should gather and come out and support the local people. And so a militia would be called up if our borders were being breached by a neighboring country. Then, you know, without a standing army like we have nowadays, and without all these other border patrol and all that, the citizenry, you and me, get together and go out and defend our borders. Well, borders, we look at that as Canada and Mexico here in America and our shorelines. But when a state was created originally, there were 13 colonies, and those colonies were considered countries, and their borders were sovereign. So if one state wanted to invade another state, let's say, for some goofy reason, that's when the militia would stand up and go, no way, stay out of here. And that's what it meant to keep the commerce regular, was to keep states playing fairly together in sandboxes that connected, and they were only delineated between lines, maybe fences. And so when you enter into another sandbox, you have to play fairly with their rules in that sandbox. And you can't sit there and go, well, we're not going to let you go from this sandbox to that sandbox if you're going through our sandbox without a tariff or something like that, because that would be unfair. And so that's what the Commerce Clause really had to do with, not to, to regulate every aspect of our damn lives. So the 3%ers, I guess, are a big group that are supposed to act as a militia to protect their state that they're in. And then the main chapter would be to organize each smaller chapter. And I'm not sure of how the organization itself runs, but I support it wholeheartedly. But the issue I had with the thing that happened in Oregon was a citizen's rights were being violated. And so Oath Keepers and 3%ers and any other groups have every right to stand up and say, wait a minute, your job, Governor, is to protect the rights of your citizens and not to protect these pseudo rights of the BLM. So they, the governors and the ATF and the FBI and every organization that was bored and showed up, had no right to be in the state. And whether Bundys were right or wrong, the simple fact in this case was a citizen said, the governor and people that run the state are not protecting our rights. The sheriff is not protecting our rights. And our rights are being infringed upon, and therefore they are violating their oath of office. And I don't think timing and strategy is an issue, because you never know when your rights are going to be violated or stomped on by a bureaucratic agency. So the Bundys showed up originally to just say, we're here to support the Hammonds, and look at all of us people are saying, this isn't cool. Let's have this big debate that we're always talking about. And then they weren't allowed to gather at a lot of the community churches or meeting halls in the city or that town. I think it was Burns. And therefore, they decided to go to the refuge and do their protests there, because there were quite a few people. So the sheriff in the town was not honoring his oath, and the governor was not honoring her oath to protect the citizens of that county. And the Bundys were just saying, hey, look over here, people. We have a problem. We need to address it. And I think that was the big issue, was a group of people, no matter who they were, and what their names were getting together and saying, hey, look over here. This is not right. Not because of the semantics, but people's rights are not being protected by people that swore an oath to protect our rights. And that's how it got convoluted. And then the FBI stepped in an overwhelming force and started pushing and doing their queer maneuvers, what I've heard the word called by someone. And I thought that was pretty good. They start getting in your face. And when you feel your space, literally your physical space, being violated, you normally want to push back and go, hey, I mean, even if you move in to kiss your girlfriend on your first date, you're breaching that space area. She can either draw back or move in. So that's why I call it a queer maneuver when you get a bunch of alpha dogs squaring off with a bunch of alpha protesters and they're getting in close enough to your face to where you're like, are we going to dance or kiss here? You know, back up. The minute you back away, then they interpret that as a hostile maneuver and some kind of defensive move. And then they sit there and go, oh, you're resisting arrest. And it's like, excuse me, you're in my space. You know, my dance card is full and I don't feel like kissing you. So why do you keep approaching me so closely? And I saw that in a lot of the, I'm not going to call them confrontations, but when people would try to approach and talk to the FBI, they would back off or they would start walking up and going, why are you here? What are you doing? And they would start doing these maneuvers to get a reaction. And so that's a little off subject, but that's kind of how it works. And the FBI went into Burns and started shutting down the community and telling them that it was for their protection. Well, the FBI has no authority, no legal authority, none, zero whatsoever, to go to a community and start policing and protecting people's safety. That's the sheriff's job. The sheriff should have said, well, no, they're protesters. I totally disagree with them, but they're not a threat to my community. And they have threatened no one, and they have hurt no one, and they haven't even run a stop sign. So don't worry, it's under control. But the FBI wanted to take control of the situation and moved in, and the sheriff stepped back. So by the sheriff and the governor stepping back and letting federal agencies run the show, they had violated their oath of office. It doesn't get much simpler than that. So the moment that started happening, these bigger organizations should have immediately stepped in and said, wait a minute, and actually got involved. The timing doesn't matter. The strategy doesn't matter. So I posted a video on Facebook, and it's at Chris Hanhall's website. And I think it's talking about, I'm trying to remember the title, and I'll put it in my show notes, but it's about one community down or something like that. And she talks about the powder alarm, which happened in the 1700s, 1775. And what the governors, which were from England back then, because 1775, that was before the Constitution and everything could happen. The governor decided he didn't like all these rallies and meetings of the patriots getting together. So the governor had outlawed meeting in groups to where you couldn't even get together in your own home without being arrested by British soldiers. So they knew that everyone was armed in all the communities because, you know, it wasn't just for hunting. It was for wild animals, everything. I mean, they were armed and they were protecting themselves. So the governor decided, well, we can't just go knocking on their doors and taking their guns because that will not work. So what we're going to do is take their gunpowder. Now, most communities had enough gunpowder for every member of the community to keep a good stockpile at home but they even understood that it was a dangerous explosive. And so they had powder rooms, and they were brick buildings. And so the governors decided to go in and seize that gunpowder, basically like the federal government does now, by buying so much ammunition that we can't acquire it, and it makes the cost go up. So the governor took some boats and went up the river and raided, I think, one or two of these storage areas where all the powder was, and took kegs of gunpowder and seized it. Well, by the end of that day, 20,000 armed protesters showed up and said, "Hey, this is not right. You can't do that." And so they called it the powder alarm. So back in the day, when we think that the patriots and the framers were good people trying to write a constitution and create this federal government we live under now, the groups of people that they didn't have the three percenters and the oath keepers, they just had farmers and ranchers out there and settlers, in one day had amassed, without the internet, without cell phones, somehow the alarm went out and 20,000 people were armed and ready to confront the governor. Now, the governor in that area only had 3,000 people. They were totally outnumbered. Now, the FBI at the height of this Oregon situation, I think, had close to 4,000, you know, ground troops, we'll call them. And yet, we as a people in today's modern high-speed age and ability to travel quicker than those people ever did, we didn't even muster up 20,000. So I'm confused. If the framers could look at something as simple as what the ATF is doing by buying so much ammunition that we can't get it, and we don't look at that as some kind of serious threat and an increase in cost that's unfair to us as citizens as a threat, and yet the colonists were smart enough to look at that and go, "This is BS. This cannot stand." They didn't sit there and talk about timing, because the governor had already done what the governor did. They didn't sit there and worry about strategy. They just sent out the alarm, and 20,000 people showed up immediately within that day. So I haven't read the whole history of how that turned out, but right around that time, when they were saying no organized, you know, no groups can meet, that was when they had the battle, and that was the shot heard around the world. And it was over gathering and free speech and people being able to get together and discuss issues. And that shot heard around the world was because of that. And it wasn't over taxes. It was over them being able to peacefully gather and protest something that they were upset about. And the governor said, "You can't do that." Well, that's really similar to what the Bundys were doing in Oregon. And one shot ended up seven of the colonial protesters. That's the same word the governors used back then. Seven of them were shot and killed. 10 were wounded. And one colonial soldier was shot and killed. But that was the start of the revolution. So I guess just a brief history lesson without very many details, because my memory sucks. You can look it up. It was April of 1775, and read the stories, you know, read about 20 of them, because they all got their slant on it. But find a good source that you trust, and then read just the history, not all the color added BS. So a revolution was started with the most powerful army in the world back then by a bunch of dirt farmers that were pissed off because they were told they couldn't gather and protest. And then the governor decided to seize their powder, like's been happening in America for years now. And they were mad enough that when just seven of them were killed, that was the start of the Revolutionary War. So I wonder what it is that holds back some of these bigger groups because we are a busy people nowadays. You know, back then they farmed and they were at home and they could gather pretty quickly, no matter what the threat, even if it was a big bear in the area. Nowadays, we do need some cohesive groups to send out the battle cry or the alarm and say, hey, what the governor in this state is doing and the sheriff is a violation of the oath and the Constitution. You guys need to get together that are on standby, however their group works, and you need to be there now. We got our cameras coming. We got our news people that we trust out going out there, and we need to gather by the end of the day or tomorrow at the latest. We don't need to sit there and debate whether it was important enough for the governor to seize the powder. We just need to say this is a breach and we need to handle it now. We don't need to sit and discuss the timing and the tactics. We can figure that out later. But right now, a citizen is having his rights literally revoked for no reason, and we demand answers right now. We don't care what spurred this on. We can see the facts on the ground that these people are peacefully protesting on public property, and all of a sudden the government is now rallying troops and coming in to put this down. We need to be there to figure this out. And if we show up in much more overwhelming force than the federal boys, we might have a chance of somebody like LaFoy not getting killed here. Now, that's easy to say in retrospect, but I think that their posturing through the whole thing would leave any sane strategist to the conclusion that someone was going to get killed. And that's why we have these organizations that are full of retired veterans and stuff, to look at that and go, you know what, the posture of the FBI here is very hostile. We can't let our spokespeople be just driving without a convoy of protection. We can't let this meeting happen until we understand the players. And we're going to be watching the road for a day or two to make sure they're not setting up an ambush, because we're strategically minded people. So the Secret Service checks everything out before the president shows up, days, weeks, and months ahead of time. So anyone with any strategic thinking should have seen this coming. Now, I'm not blaming anyone for that. I'm just saying, when a group shows up, they should bring the full weight of everything they have to offer the situation, whether it's personal protection, security details, analysis, and arm people to always be with the key players in this, regardless of the reasoning. It's not like they were getting together because one rancher had, you know, accidentally misbranded another rancher's cattle. That's a civil issue, and it can be worked out civilly by clear-thinking people. This was an issue that was instigated by a federal bureaucracy, legitimate or not, it's not the issue, that went in and was trying to take people's property for 30 years, had overreached and unfairly accused and imprisoned two people, and it had come to a point to where the governor and the sheriff were not honoring their oath, and therefore it was a just reason to rally the troops, so to speak. Because the federal government believed that they were right and they had no qualms about questioning timing. The minute they saw the Bundys show up, they had hundreds of FBI people on their way, SWAT teams, tactical teams. So they weren't sitting there going, oh, maybe we shouldn't show up. No, they knew they were overreaching and they needed to be there to protect their play. As a citizen in America, I would always hope that it was the federal government or my state government or my county that would protect my decision, my rights and my freedom, my widgets that I'm taking to market, as long as what I'm doing is not violating someone else's right. I would never expect them to seize what I have when I've done nothing wrong. And when that day comes, I would hope that these bigger groups would be on the lookout and turn their gaze over and go take care of it.
And that's why the 3%ers have chapters in every state, and they should have it in every county, because we need a voice from time to time, not a bunch of rabble rousers, but a voice, because these things do happen from time to time, and it's becoming more and more pervasive. So I think that this battle, this skirmish, was lost by the people, the American people. There was a good play of the game, and everybody didn't have their ducks in a row and didn't show up on time, and they didn't stand firm enough, and they didn't have a strong enough posture, and they didn't pull the weight of the American people by using the media and the retired veterans and the VFWs to get people on the ground, that when you look at the imagery at the news, you're like, holy shit, those are old World War II veterans. We can't just go in there and firebomb them. We need to think about this, because we respect those old people, and maybe this issue has some legs that we need to look at. So it was a missed opportunity. I don't think we have many more of those left. We're running out of timeouts, because the apparatus that has been being set up for 80, 90 years or more in America by enemies foreign and domestic, have been working to overthrow America and our freedom and our liberty for probably even more than 100 years. And I think everything is in place, and they're just waiting to set the lid down and get a good seal on it. So we don't have many more timeouts in the game. We don't have any more really good things that could maybe rally people. And it was played wrong, and we lost that one. Okay, now we can move on. I just hope we have time to move on. Because the longer we drag our feet, the closer we get to whatever it is that these enemies, foreign and domestic, have planned for us. And they do it in secret meetings, so we don't see it. And they're protected by all the agencies they've set up to keep those meetings secret. If Oath Keepers has 3 or 4 big rallies and recruiting rallies, the federal government knows about that. They're watching it with drones. They're monitoring the phone calls. They're monitoring the text. They're monitoring the websites. They know every move we make. And I don't think that's fair, because we're not making any moves that are hostile. I mean, the FBI makes hostile moves all the time, just like in Oregon and with Bundy Ranch and Waco and Ruby Ridge. But they're protected by the cover of their giant apparatus they've built. And it makes it hard for even big groups like 3%ers and Oath Keepers. And there's others out there. I'm not excluding you. I just haven't heard the names yet. There's the Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Organization with Sheriff Mack, and there's a lot of them. There's 10th Amendment Center. There's a lot of boots on the ground, but they can, you know, the feds can march in. They can have secret meetings. They can kind of do whatever they want, and they're funded by us. So if they need something more to protect their identities, they just do it. You and I kind of have to be out in the open. And so it's the same as the Powder Rebellion or Alarm. The enemies always see us meeting, because we don't have a gigantic apparatus. We don't even have privacy on the internet to where we can keep things on the low key. Not that we're trying to defraud anyone or do anything corrupt, but we'd like to gather our numbers and maybe have a plan that's just not being broadcast to all of our enemies day to day. So we don't have a lot of time, and we don't have a lot of options, and we don't have much secrecy or quietness or privacy or hush-hushness, whatever you want to call it, not in a derogatory or revolutionary way. We just can't get together and really get to a game plan. I mean, we can't even get in a huddle on the 50-yard line and come up with a great play, because they're monitoring everything. Everyone in that huddle has cameras, microphones, and surveillance equipment watching them. But when the other team gets together, oh man, they got a dome over them. We don't see them. We don't hear them. We don't even get to pick up on their body language. So if you look at it that way and you go, well, we have no privacy, which is a right that they're supposed to be protecting, you see that we're running out of options and time. So losing these little skirmishes is not a good thing. And I think hesitation with the Oregon situation by some of the bigger groups was a fatal hesitation in this battle.
So I'm not trying to call anyone out or be upset about it or say that I have a greater plan. I don't. I just have opinions, and I want somebody to maybe listen to, you know, my opinion and others and go, you know, we are running out of time. We need to rethink our strategy and then get the word out. I don't care if they do it passing notes in school anymore like we used to have to do, you know, put together a newsletter and hand it to, you know, 10 people and hand it to 10 people and hand it, you know, make copies and hand it to 10 people. Anything that's more secure than just putting it out there on the internet. Because the minute you do that, you've exposed your quarterback and say, here's our play. Here's what we're going to do. 10, 20 minutes before the game even starts. So it's not to demean or be derogatory toward any of these groups, because I think they're all great. But we have seen over history, any group that's worth its salt be marginalized by the media and turned into a joke. And then when that group makes one little mistake, maybe, not in a bad way, just to maybe tried one thing and it wasn't the right thing to do. Oh boy, that's the crucifying moment right there. You know, you look at the John Birch Society, you know, they've been marginalized so much and mocked and laughed at throughout the years. But then the FBI turns around and makes a mistake. They make mistakes hundreds of times a day. We don't see it, and it's not on the news because they have their shield around them protecting their privacy. And the federal government was set up to protect our privacy. So I don't get it. So that's my final thoughts for this episode. And like I say, it's not to demean any group out there. I don't care if you're a group of 10 people. If your motives are to secure the rights and the blessings of freedom and liberty, and you're not going to violate state law and piss your sheriff off, and you're doing something to call attention to the big bad wolf called the federal government, then it's a noble cause. We just need to be a little more focused, I think, and have a little bit more autonomy to where we have some privacy and yet enough organization to where, you know, my group of 10 and your group of 10 and 1,000 groups of 10 that work with some bigger groups, and all of a sudden there's just like the signal. I don't know what that signal is, but I'm going to make a call and be there. And, you know, so I don't know how to do it, but we're always being watched, and it's very hard to keep our playbook under wraps, and their playbook is in a guarded vault. So it's not fair, equal footing, but that's the way it is. And so when something comes up, like what happened in Oregon with the Bundys and the Hammonds, I think we need more rapid response from everyone. You know, clowns like me out there ranting and raving about it and you know, making calls, you know, and saying, go out there, support these guys if you're capable, if you're retired and you got an RV. And you're wondering what to do this week, go there. You know, so everyone plays their part. You get a lot of movement going really quick. Not everyone can be at the back of the vehicle pushing, but a lot of people can be grabbing on and hanging on and pulling and getting it going in that direction. Even if you're just sitting in the seat rocking, going, let's move, move. As long as everyone is focused on that, small groups, big groups, we'll get momentum quicker, and we'll be able to turn out 20,000 times 20,000 people by the end of each day when something serious happens. And I think, to me, the things we need to be watching for are not silly little kitten in a tree type thing, but when you see a governor and a sheriff and a bureaucracy taking land and then oppressing people from protesting peacefully, that should be a big-ass red flag, and it shouldn't take too much time to look at it and go, constitutionally, the feds are wrong, the people are right, the sheriff isn't honoring his oath, the governor isn't honoring her oath, there's something afoot here, this has been going on 30 years, we've been monitoring it, this is the time to act, go. Because if you're looking for the big things, they're always easier to see. And no matter how small we want to consider the Oregon Bundy revolt, murder, whatever, imprisonment of innocent people, when you analyze the timeline, it's people not honoring their oath and not protecting the rights of citizens. Oh, there's a strike against them. And it's citizens trying to peacefully protest and shine a light on something that's unjust. And then you have a massive buildup of federal forces. That's pretty much all you really need to see. Go, okay, that's it. It's simple. It goes right down to the basic constitutional freedoms that we have and the oath that the states and the sheriff are supposed to protect our freedom, not the federal freedom. I want to apologize now that it's Wednesday and I haven't got my podcast out at 3 a.m. like I normally do. I did have some computer problems again, which if you've been listening from the beginning, I've been trying to patch my computer together for, you know, the last year. And it was already 8 years old, so it was dying. Actually, it was already dead. So I did get a new computer. I got a laptop. And so I will be trying to be more punctual. And then we had a holiday here, and my wife decided that there were more important things to be doing than my silly little podcasts and stuff, which, considering what we had to do, she was kind of right. So I got behind the eight ball. I apologize for that. But this will be up, and for you all, I'm sorry. And I'm thinking of maybe doing another show also, kind of, so there'll be two per week. And so I hope you enjoy that one too. It won't be as long a rant, and it'll be a little bit more focused on other issues. Like I say, even though I'm a prepper guy and every one of my podcasts and my website should be all about prepping, don't be confused. These are the reasons we prepare. And so whether it's politics or religion, end of days, or Teotwaki, these are the many reasons we should be watching to give us our ideas and reasons why we prepare. So I hope I stayed on track enough for you. Like I said, my thoughts on the three percenters and the oath keepers are just my thoughts, and I could be wrong. I want to thank you for listening to my show, and I hope I bring something to the table for everyone and a little insights on the importance of prepping and maybe finding a reason why we should prep. Usually those reasons revolve around politics and the world around us. Go to YouTube and check out my channel. I have videos there, a little bit more rants and raves about how I look at some of the things that are happening in our world. Watch some of my videos. Subscribe would really help me out, and I would appreciate it knowing that you're enjoying it. Your feedback is always welcome. Go to prepperguy.com, read the show notes on this episode, and then also for anything you might need in the way of supplies, packs, things for maybe just camping and enjoying life before it all collapses, go to doomsdaydepot.com. That's doomsdaydepot.com. We have everything there. And as I explained before, that is an Amazon store. So you get to use all your Prime membership benefits. Well, that's about it. I hope you have enjoyed this. And we shall talk to you all next week. Enjoy the apocalypse.